This podcast is one of the many good ones on the Self Defense Radio Network.
Hi, this is Derek from Atlanta. Unlike Bob, I am a former law enforcement officer, but I still enjoy listening to a practical show by a practical guy. You're listening to the Handgun World Podcast.
Hi everyone, I'm Bob Main, and this is episode 405 of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is a practical show done by a practical guy like me. I love shooting. I love carrying pistols. Strongly believe in my Second Amendment rights, and this show is about that. And this week, I have another interview. This is kind of cool because I got a chance to interview a listener of mine in person, and I don't get a chance to do that very much. As a matter of fact, I don't get to actually physically meet very many of my listeners unless you come to a class, and I'm going to start getting to some trade shows pretty soon. Matter of fact, I'm kind of considering going to the NRA show in Atlanta, and then once I start going to shows, I'll probably be able to meet a whole lot more listeners. But unless you come to class or unless I happen to be coming to your town and we can put something together to meet, I don't get a chance to meet you very often. So I sat down with Chuck Boylan, who has been carrying and shooting a Trijicon RMR sight on his Glock 19. And if you recall, a few weeks ago, I did an episode where I had Jack Rumbaugh talk about red dot sights, specifically Trijicon RMRs on Glock 19s. And he's an instructor, Jack's an instructor, and also works for Suarez International, who actually sells and installs the Trijicon RMRs on Glocks. This time, I wanted to actually get somebody, find somebody else, just somebody that doesn't, that's not really in the business, that's not really in the industry, but is a shooter, is a dedicated to his self-defense, and a person who is somebody that you would want with you if the crap went down and you found yourself in a world of hurt and unfortunately had to use your gun. You'd want my friend Chuck with you. I've trained with Chuck several times. I've seen what he can do. But specifically his experience now in carrying a gun, a pistol, with a red dot sight. So we're going to get to the interview here in just a minute. Please remember to support the sponsor of this show. We're going to talk about holsters in this interview coming up. And as you know, Concealment Solutions makes excellent fine holsters that I use 90% of the time. Especially their Cobra outside the waistband, but the Black Mamba inside the waistband. Even the appendix carry holsters that they make at Concealment Solutions. Good stuff. I highly recommend them. You get 10% off if you use the coupon code HANDGUNWORLD at checkout. HANDGUNWORLD at checkout. You don't get 10% off the belts, but you do off the holsters. Hey, I got to say something about his belts. Well, there's two belts I got to say something about. One is the Concealment Solutions Python. So let's do a little review here. The Python gun belt. I bought the horsehide version. Really, really like it. It's a dress belt that doesn't look like a gun belt, and it's a good quality gun belt. The horsehide version is fantastic. It's more expensive than the cowhide version, but it is rigid enough and supportive enough to definitely be able to hold any kind of gun that you want to carry using that belt. So that's my dress gun belt. My everyday gun belt now has become an Aries Gear. Aries Gear, I think it's called the Aries Gear Enhanced with the black buckle. Really like it. My friend Chuck, who I'm going to interview here in just a minute, he's the one that turned me on to the Aries Gear belt. And I've been using the Aries Gear belt now 3 weeks, just totally think it's the way to go. If you don't want a dress belt, spend the money on Aries Gear. I bought mine from LaRue Tactical. So a little plug for the folks at LaRue Tactical. Their customer service was great. I bought the wrong size at first. I sent it back. No problem with the return. Thank you, LaRue Tactical. I'm very impressed with the Aries Gear belt. I'll put a link in the show notes to the exact belt that I bought if you want to check it out. Probably the most rigid but yet comfortable concealed carry belt that I've ever tried. And I could probably carry two 1911s on this belt if I wanted to. It's that good, and the belt is so important, folks. The belt is such an important part of your concealed carry system in supporting the gun's weight and concealing it. Even if you open carry, the belt is highly important. So I had to get that in there since I kind of got on the subject of concealment solutions and belts and everything. All right, into the interview right now with Chuck Boylan, and we're going to talk a little bit more about actually using a red dot on a pistol for a couple of years now. Here we go. Hey, well, for the interview segment, I am with a good friend of mine, a listener. We've known each other a long time, shoot together, been to training classes, Chuck Boylan from Louisiana. Chuck, welcome.
Hello, Bob. Thanks for having me on the podcast. Glad to be here.
Well, no problem. I love it. I like being able to do these interviews in person. Person's a lot better than over Skype.
Absolutely. It's good to see you. Glad you're in town.
Yeah, and I'm glad to be here. So I wanted you to talk about RMRs because you've had time now carrying and shooting an RMR, a Glock 19 with a Trijicon RMR. You've taken a class on it. And I'm new to RMR. So the first thing I wanted to ask you is, why did you even get interested in getting a red dot sight on your pistol?
Well, being a seasoned warrior, my eyesight has changed, and I've had some corrective surgery done, and I have some issues at different times of the day, different light situations when the sun's low in the sky or low light situations. I've got a couple of issues that I'm working with. So I was taking a Suarez class years ago and got introduced to our friend instructor John Payne, and he had a Glock 17 with an RMR and was gracious enough to pass it on to me and let me try it out, and I liked it. And I could kind of see some of the advantages of it, and debated about it for a while, and decided to go ahead and, you know, pull the trigger on it, so to speak, and buy one of my own. So I did, and decided to use that as my everyday carry gun. But I figured I better get some additional training, so I signed up for a Suarez International 3-day class on red dot pistols. Did that, and enjoyed the hell out of it. Learned a lot, and I would definitely recommend if you've never actually owned one or shot one much to, if you're going to stake your life on it, take a good class like that.
Yeah, and I'm taking John's 3-day class, the same one you took, later this month. Matter of fact, by the time this podcast comes out, we'll be starting in a little less than 2 weeks. So you're just slightly older than I am, and I have the same eyesight issue.
Mm-hmm.
How do you find that red dot to be with, I'm going to say, challenged eyesight?
When you start getting to distances beyond, say, 10 to 15 yards, it becomes more pronounced. So the red dot will enable you, well, it enables me to make more precise shots at the longer ranges. At shorter distances, it's still an advantage, I guess just because I've trained with it a lot and I've shot it a lot. But I find the further the shot is, the longer the distance, the easier it is to make the hit. Just not having to line up the three different, the rear notch, front sight, and the target, you pretty much just, you know, point out. I usually reference the front sight, and then you pick up the dot, and then you just place the dot over the target, and as long as you get the rest of your fundamentals down and get a good trigger press, usually bullet's going to hit right where you're aiming that red dot.
Yeah, tell me what you think of this. You know, a lot of people have been in favor of, like, a red fiber optic front sight, mm-hmm. or I like, you know, orange and green front sights, and plain black rear sights. And a lot of people are big fans of those. And one of the reasons that they say that they're fans of that is because it immediately draws mm-hmm. your attention to the front sight.
Yeah.
Don't you think a red dot kind of does the same thing?
It does, and it eliminates the need to have to line up the rear sight, front sight. So it's just one less thing that you have to do.
Yeah, it's one less thing you have to do. And the longer distance, everybody I've ever talked to that has actually used a red dot on a pistol for a long time, they talk about the advantages of longer distances.
Mm-hmm. Longer distances. I mean, you know, in this class that I took, it was in Prescott. So, you know, it's out in the desert, kind of wide open areas.
Prescott, Arizona.
Yeah, this range was really nice. And Gabe actually taught the class with several of his assistant instructors. But anyway, we got out at some pretty long distances. Mostly on the second and third day, we were shooting long distances. We did a lot of fundamental work the first day. But, you know, we gradually progressed to longer and longer shooting. We stepped out to, you know, 25 yards. Most people have shot, if you've taken classes, most people have shot 25, 30 yards, and even beyond that. But, you know, we started stretching things out to 50 yards, then 75 yards, then 100 yards. And that was about the most that we did in the class, and at 100 yards, with a red dot, if you do all the things that you need to do, you know, making 100-yard hits and actually it was like a half-size human silhouette steel, and it's really not a problem to hit a target that size at 100 yards. Now, you're not going to sit there and blast off multiple shots and ring them, you know, unless you're maybe a professional shooter, but making an average guy should be able to make a 100-yard shot without a problem with a red dot with some training.
Well, come on, Mr. Chuck. Why would anybody need to take a shot more than 7 to 10 yards with a pistol?
I don't know. Come on. Have you ever heard of sudden jihad syndrome?
Oh, yeah. I have heard of sudden jihad syndrome. Well, Jack Rumbaugh gets credit for that. He was the one that brought that up on my show. Think about it. That sounds funny, but sudden jihad syndrome seems to happen a lot these days, doesn't it?
It does. It's more and more. And I will tell you that I think I line up with just about everything that Jack said. I listened to that podcast, and, you know, it was a great interview, and I agree pretty much with everything that he said as far as the attributes to the red dot. I would have never believed that I could make long-distance hits with a pistol as I did in that class. I mean, you know, where I live, we don't really have that many opportunities to shoot. I mean, I guess you could shoot on a long, you know, we've got a 300-yard rifle range not far from here, but typically you're not doing that with a pistol. But out there in Prescott, you know, we were stretching it out a lot further than 100 yards. In fact, Gabe has a target up the side of this mountain up there at the range. I mean, it's not his range, but at the range we were shooting at, there was a piece of steel up there at 285 yards.
Wow.
They had several targets up there, different sizes, but he had one in particular that, you know, I saw some instructors making hits on. And because of the terrain, you know, you had a dust cloud that was blowing up every time you made a shot, so you could see where your bullet was impacting. And there is some holdover involved at that distance, but just with regular cheap Winchester white box ammo, you know, we were making hits at that range.
Yeah, and Let's talk about some reality that could happen, that we could find ourselves in. You know, let's say your kid is out playing and he or she happens to be 25 yards from the house while they're out playing, and some dirtbag is threatening your kid's life at a distance of 25 yards. You might not have a chance to go inside and get your AR-15. Mm-hmm. Your pistol might be the only thing you've got. Mm-hmm. And so that red dot at that distance, 20 or 25, is pretty sweet, isn't it?
It is. I mean, then you're talking about the necessity to make a precise shot. You know, somebody somebody doing something like that, you know, and that's taking one of your family members as a hostage, and if you've got the guts to step up and make that attempt, you better be dialed in.
Well, I think you better have the guts to step up and do that. What are you going to do? Let him kill your child?
Hey, I'm with that. I'm with you there 100%. I'm just saying, I don't know if everybody is, but
no, you know, not everybody.
If you train and you practice and you know what you can do on demand, you know, that I think that gives you the push to step up and do it.
Yeah, and hey, I'm sorry, folks that are listening to this. You know, I just talked about some dirtbag that wants to kill your child, but this is reality. This happens these days. You know, I mean, a dirtbag took an AR-15 into an elementary school a few years ago and shot up a bunch of kids. Anybody that thinks that this stuff will never go on is really living in a dream world. And so the red dot just kind of, it helps you push the handgun out to those distances in case you need it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it gives you more capabilities with a handgun that you wouldn't ordinarily have just with iron sights.
But what about close range? Is it any help there?
I think it is. You know, the more that you train with it, the better that you're going to get with it. And I think that you can definitely, you know, I'm not going to say it's the same for everybody. You may not get, your mileage may differ. But I've found that with regular training with it, taking classes with it, that I have increased speed on making hits at close ranges. Now, you know, again, you need to get your fundamentals down and you need to be able to do what you need to do. But, you know, let's face it, there are some close range shots that you need to take and put, you know, the closer you are, I think you need to use time as your advantage. I mean, you know, at 5 yards, you should be able to put 5 or 6 hits on a decent size group a lot quicker than you can, say, at 25 yards.
Of course. Yeah.
So, you know, are you using your sights as carefully at 5 yards as you are at 25? Probably not. And it's the same with the red dot, but, you know, you still have to have all your other marksmanship skills down pat, you know?
Yeah, but if you do need to make that precise shot, even at 5 yards...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, let's say it is a hostage situation at 5 yards.
Or the bad guy's behind cover and he's only giving you a small window to make the hit.
He's only giving you a very small target to hit.
Right.
And you got to hit it. It's easier with that red dot.
Absolutely.
Because you only have to line up one thing, and that's a red dot.
Right.
You know, we all, it's funny, everybody accepts having a red dot on their AR or their AK.
Right.
And it's like, some people think, well, why would you have an AK, or why would you have an AR-15 without a red dot? Although I got one without a red dot, mm-hmm. and I have one with a red dot. Mm-hmm. But everybody wants to have that red dot on their AR. I think it's rapidly becoming that way on pistols, isn't it?
I would say so. You know, the big difference is the abuse that the red dot's going to take on a reciprocating slide. But you know, you got to go with a quality product. You have to prove it and make sure that this thing is going to work for you. So I would say you need to put lots of rounds through it and test it out before you actually put it in use.
You also have to go with a quality installer of the red dots on the slides. There's a right way and there's a wrong way to do it. And there are several companies that do a good job. Suarez International does a good job, but there's others out there too.
Right.
It seems to me that most people are going for the Trijicon RMR.
Yeah, I would say so. You know, the loophole Delta Point seems to be pretty popular too.
But yeah, it is.
I think in the in most of the classes that I've seen people carry red dots, it's been the Trijicon.
In full disclosure, neither Chuck nor me are getting 1 cent from Trijicon, and we have no incentive to say it other than you're a user.
Right.
And I wanted you to do this podcast because you're a user. How long have you had it now?
Going on 2 years now.
Okay, so you're a 2-year user. How many rounds have you shot through your Glock 19 with the red dot?
I would say about 2,500.
Okay, so 2 years and 2,500 rounds. I'd say you're a pretty good test case to talk about the validity of a setup like that.
Yeah, I would say so. I did have some issues with it in the beginning, and I think that I actually got a defective one. I had some problems with the dot fading out, and you know, I did some tests on it, some checks with it, you know, as far as the battery contacts. I ended up sending it back to Trigicon. They got it back to me within a couple of weeks. The report came back that they replaced a diode in it. Hadn't had a second's problem since. And that was early on. So I did take a class and shot the thing for probably about, in 3 days, almost 1,000 rounds. And, you know, it made it through part of the class and then had some issues with it. But since I got it back from Trigicon, I've got over, 1,500 rounds since with no issues at all.
Okay, and how do you carry it?
I carry an appendix.
Okay, you carry an appendix. And what kind of appendix holster?
I use a Dale Fricke Archangel.
Okay, so you're carrying it appendix and a Dale Fricke Archangel. And any problems with concealment?
No, I did have to modify the holster. Actually, I've got that, and I've got the Suarez International appendix carry holster, too. So I like both of them. The one from SI is already good to go. With the Dale Fricke, I did have to take the Dremel tool to it a little bit and relieve just a little bit to clear the RMR.
Yeah, but if I'm not mistaken, if you order from Dale and you tell him you're carrying a red dot, I think he custom makes it that way.
He does. The only issue is that the one that he's got for it, if you tell him you want the standard one, he's going to send you one that's got the... It actually covers the RMR.
Okay.
All right, so I'm using the regular Archangel that's not made for the RMR, so it's not going to fit. Unless you modify it, or I guess he could modify it, you know, if you ask him to.
Yeah.
But I just did not like the one he's got dedicated for the RMR because it's a little bit bulkier.
Yeah. Well, Gabe and his team have been doing it for a long time. They got some quality products. They do quality installations with it, and I'm excited to start using mine. And I've got a feeling the same thing's going to happen to me, that once I get used to it and take that class, I'm probably not going to want to carry my other guns much that don't have a red dot.
Yeah, that's the way it's been for me. I mean, I used to flip around and try different guns. You know, I mean, I've got a few different types, different manufacturers, but I think that it's better if you can just stick with one platform, and I really like the red dot, and I think it's just better for me not to go back and forth from one gun to another or from, you know, conventional iron sights to a red dot. In fact, when I do dry fire now, instead of, I mean, I've got another G19 without the red dot, so I could just pull it out the safe and then dry fire with it, and then I'd have to fumble around with pulling rounds out of it and putting them back in. But at this stage of the game, I'd just try to stick with just the one gun.
You know, we were talking about holsters earlier. I want to get to that one gun thing in a minute. We were talking about holsters. And just for my listeners' benefit, the Concealment Solutions Cobra outside the waistband strong side hip holster, my Glock 19 with the RMR fits in it perfectly.
Nice.
Yeah, without any modification at all.
Nice.
So just in case people don't want to carry appendix and they want to carry behind the hip, that's an option. By the way, I didn't set you up to talk about the one gun concept, did I?
No, we didn't. No.
So why? Your belief is a lot like mine, and when we say one gun, we typically mean one pattern, one platform, one style of gun. Why do you believe in that?
Muscle memory, and just the familiarity that you have with it. It's just it looks the same, it feels the same, and I'm just comfortable now just sticking with one platform. You know, I'm not a Glock fanboy. Glock is really not my favorite gun. I love 1911s, and I think that, you know, if the 1911 had, I don't know, there's just no one, to me, no one gun that fits all.
Well, if an all-steel 1911 only weighed 23 ounces,
right,
instead of 38, that right, might be one yeah, benefit, right?
And if it carried 16 rounds and it wasn't as heavy as it is, yeah, you know, so I think you just got to boil it down to what works best for you. I mean, I don't want to spend every nickel I have on just guns. I've spent quite a few nickels on them, but I think at this stage of the game, it's more about, you know, dialing in your training, your practice, and your dedication, and just trying to settle on, you know, on, I don't know, to me, it's better to settle on one platform and just stick with it.
And this was not at all meant to beat up on 1911s. It's just that, and again, I've said it 1,000 times, and I'll say it for the 1,001st time, that if a 1911 is your gun and you're well-trained and you know how to use it and you can fight with it and you can do it effortlessly without thinking, then carry that 1911 and stick with it. Stick with the platform that works the best for you.
Right, right. I mean, I've carried 1911s. I love my 1911s. I'll never give them up, and I do enjoy shooting them. But, you know, for me, I'm good with this platform that I'm using now, and I just plan on sticking with this.
Yeah, by the way, there are red dot sights now for even the smaller guns. They're out there for the Glock 43. I believe they're out there for the Smith & Wesson Shield.
Mm-hmm.
I know for a fact Suarez International is putting red dots on Glock 43s. But I think there's other places that are doing it, too, and also Smith & Wesson Shield.
Yeah, 1911s, too.
Oh, 1911s.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Nighthawk Customs is making a, I forgot which model that they have.
But right.
But it's coming with an RMR.
You're right, yeah, it's coming with an RMR on it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, cool, that's
right.
Even cooler.
Right.
That's even more cool than just the slide cut for an RMR. It comes with the RMR.
Right. I've never seen it or handled it, but I did hear that they were developing that, and I would think by now it's already out there.
You got to take out a second mortgage, but it's out there.
Yeah, I think that would be pricey.
but all right, so they're getting accepted even by major 1911 manufacturers.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, last question is that with a red dot, do you... Okay, what would you say to somebody, because I get this all the time, what would you say to somebody that says, well, that red dot costs as much or more than the cost of the entire pistol? Why would I want to do that?
You know what? Optics are important. If you ask anybody that's a good long-range shooter, you know, what do they invest in the scope that's on top of their rifle? You know, usually they're spending more on the scope than they're spending on the rifle, so... You know, it's all in what, I guess, in how you perceive it. But if, and I don't think that the red dot necessarily makes you a better shooter. You know, I think that's the basic skills you have to develop on your own. But it's an accessory. It's an expensive accessory. But I think that you have to look and weigh all the attributes and make the decision for yourself. For some people, I would think that they would say, no way, I'd rather buy a second gun. You know, for me, I saw the sense in the design concept, and I spoke with people that I thought were very knowledgeable about it, and, you know, heck, I rolled the dice, and I'm glad that I did. I don't look back on it, and I'm glad I made the decision that I did.
Your point earlier about that it doesn't make you an automatically good or better shooter, you know, if you're jerking the trigger... You're jerking the trigger.
Right, yeah.
And just because you have a red dot on the pistol doesn't not going to stop you from jerking the trigger.
No, not at all.
You know? Or it's not going to stop you from, you know, from not managing... It's not going to stop you from managing recoil. Or it's not going to help you manage recoil.
Right, yeah.
And things like that.
Yeah, we all know that there's certain skills that you need to master. You know, all the different fundamentals of marksmanship that you need to button up with. You get that done, and I think the red dot is going to do nothing but enhance it. You know, there probably are some issues and some situations that it might be a detriment, you know, depending on the situation. I mean, you may have environmental conditions where it's raining, it's foggy outside, et cetera, and you know that screen is going to probably cloud up. But you know what? You may have somebody that's wearing glasses, and the same thing's that's going to happen to them. You know.
I wear glasses, and right. It's happened to me.
Right. So.
You know what? That's when at reasonable distances, that's when your point shooting skills help.
Right. Yeah. If you're at a short distance like that, absolutely. You know, you don't necessarily need to be locked in on your sights to make good hits at close distances.
Okay, I'll give you the last word. Anything else you want to say about pistols with red dots?
You know, If you're considering it, I would strongly recommend that you find somebody that owns one already. If you're taking a class, nowadays there's usually somebody in the class that's got one. Ask to borrow it. Ask for some feedback on it. Try it yourself. Think about it and make your own decision. But I, you know, for me, I think I made a good choice and I plan on sticking with it. So to each his own. You know, it's just like anything else. You know, you can go out and purchase a product, and for you it works great, for somebody else it doesn't. So I'm not going to say it's going to work great for everybody, but I think for a lot of people, especially older folks, it's going to be a good positive thing.
Yeah, I told you you could have the last word, but I'm going to take that back. Mm-hmm. Because I wanted to make the point, even USPSA competition now has a Red Dot Optics mm-hmm. division, and I'll bet you it won't be too long IDPA will come up with it too.
Yeah, I think in the future you're going to see that, you know, as the popularity grows. I would agree.
Good. Chuck, thanks for coming on the show. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Bob. Glad to be here.
You're welcome. Thanks. All right, I'm back. This segment, I want to talk about some listener emails. I think I'm going to start doing this in every episode now because I do get a lot of emails. You guys deserve at least some kind of a response from me. And some of this makes good material for podcasts. So here we go. First of all, Steve sent me an email, and Steve's in Idaho. And he says, Bob, I have a question about IDPA legal bug match guns. For those of you who don't know about IDPA terminology, that means backup gun. He used to live in Houston. He said in Houston, bug matches were not very common. But he says now he lives in Idaho. And he said his bug gun, his backup gun for bug competition is usually a 5-shot J-frame. And he wants to know what people typically use in backup gun matches. Steve, I've only shot one backup gun match. And most of what I saw are guns like Smith & Wesson Shield, Glock 43, 5-shot J-frames. You know, single stack 9mm. One person had an XDS 45. And that kind of stuff. I have seen some people use a Glock 26. And, you know, Glock 26s used to be backup guns, but not very many people use them as actual backup guns anymore because there's so many smaller choices out there. And that's typically what I see. I did see some people using pocket size 380s. Not drawing from the pocket, but using the pocket size 380s. Because if I remember right, I believe in IDPA, backup gun division is only like 5 or 6 rounds in the magazine. 5 or 6 rounds in the gun per string. I can't remember if the new IDPA rules have expanded that or not. I don't think so. Maybe the new rules are 6 shots now. Somebody correct me on that if I'm wrong. Some of you that study the IDPA rules pretty closely. I don't study the rule book all that close. But Steve, that's what I have typically seen in the backup gun matches. He's got a second question. This is interesting. He says, for listeners, I was out practicing on some land out in the snow, and the temperature was around 14 degrees. Whew, man. For those of us in South Texas, whew, man, that's cold. Of course, you guys know I am a cheesehead from Wisconsin, and I used to be used to that cold weather, but I've been living away from Wisconsin longer than I actually lived in Wisconsin, so I've become a lightweight now. I mean, 14 is cold for me. Here in San Antonio, when it gets down to 30, people are freaking out. Not me. I don't freak out at 30 degrees. 14, I might pass up shooting in 14-degree weather. I don't know. It's been a long time since I've actually gone out in 14-degree weather to shoot. I know some of you listening to this right now in early February, you're saying, hey, that would be a nice day in early February, especially my listeners up there in Alaska, right? Speaking of my Alaska listeners, I got quite a few of them. I want to give a shout out to Wasilla Steve and Ed Jackson. How you doing, guys? I know there's other Alaska listeners that I have. Anyway, back to Steve's email. He said the action on his Mossberg 500 got some condensation on it and froze, turning his pump gun into a single shot. It took a minute or two to get the pump back into action, so he said this might be useful information for people that don't train in below freezing temps. Steve, thanks for the email. Interesting. I've never had a action freeze up on me due to cold weather, but as I just mentioned, I don't go out and shoot in that frigid stuff anymore. Although I probably should, but I can't find any 14-degree weather to shoot in here in South Texas. Maybe I'll have to take a trip up north and see if I can find some 14-degree weather to shoot in. So, Steve, thanks for the email. I got another one from Corey. And Corey said that one area that's challenging in helping new shooters, or that's challenging for new shooters, is the capability of manipulating the slide, racking the slide, since different types of pistols require different force to rack the slide, especially the subcompacts. So Corey says, understanding technique is a factor. Why do manufacturers not put the weight or the force that it takes to properly pull the slide back to put a round in the chamber? Why do they not publish that? And there's a little bit more to Corey's email. But first of all, Corey, you're right. Technique is the big deal here. Technique. I've trained new shooters. I've worked with several of them. And I was teaching a class of new shooters one time, and there were small-statured people that had never shot a gun before. And after the first time that they tried to rack the slide, a couple of them couldn't do it. Several of them did on a small gun on my Smith & Wesson Shield and also on my Car Arms PM9. By the way, that's not an easy one to rack the slide on. Once I stopped them, taught them proper technique, it wasn't much of an issue after that. I don't know why gun manufacturers don't publish the amount of force that it takes to rack the slide on the gun. It's a good question. That's a good question. But with proper training, that's not an issue for most people. I get frustrated when I read things or hear things from people that say, oh, well, you know, my wife can't rack the slide on this small little semi-auto pistol, so I got her a J-frame revolver instead. You know, gosh, there's so many things wrong with that. There's so many things wrong with that. One thing that's wrong with that is the J-frame revolver is probably a lot harder to shoot well than the small semi-automatic. Okay? The other thing that's wrong with that is with some training on properly racking the slide, that wouldn't be an issue. I'm going to get into that in just a minute. And the third thing wrong with that is guys, don't buy a gun for your wife. I'm not saying that Corey did that in this email. I'm getting off on a tangent here, but don't buy a gun for your wife. Let her pick it out herself. I know this has been said not only by me, but almost every person in the gun industry who teaches people. And yet we hear about it all the time. Also, here's an interesting thing to think about. If somebody truly does not have enough strength to rack the slide on a small semi-automatic pistol, there's probably a pretty good chance they don't have the strength, the finger strength, to press the 12-pound double action trigger on a J-frame revolver and create accurate shots. So it's all about technique. And you know what? All you got to do is get on YouTube. Get on YouTube and just Google proper technique to rack the slide on a semi-automatic pistol. Okay, so many people do it wrong, and that's why they can't do it, because they don't maximize their hand, arm, and shoulder strength. And really, your arms and your shoulders is where most of your pressure should come from when you're racking the slide on a semi-automatic pistol. And if you follow the proper technique, you generally won't have a problem. But it is a good email that you sent in, Corey, and I don't understand why pistol manufacturers don't put that out there. Corey said in his email, this could really help greatly in determining if a pistol is a good match for a particular shooter based on their age, gender, preferences, and things like that. Well, Corey, what I want to say about that is I hope somebody does not make their decision based on the amount of strength it takes to rack the slide. I hope that's not the only criteria that they use to make their decision, because, like I said, that can be learned. And it's probably going to end up in the long run, once somebody gets good training, it's going to be a minor thing rather than a major thing. That's why new shooters, people who are buying a gun for the first time, they need to go try several different guns. They need to rent, I've said it before, rent no less than 10 guns before you make a decision, including J-frame revolvers. Because, you know, I'm not knocking J-frame revolvers. I own one. I have a Smith & Wesson 642 Performance Center. And I like it. I mean, I'm not a big fan of J-frame revolvers, but I have one and I occasionally carry it. I'm not saying that they're bad guns. They're very good guns, especially a lot of them that are on the market today. And if you know how to use it and you're well-trained and you've practiced with a J-frame revolver, it can be a very effective tool for concealed carry. So are a lot of the small micro 9s and micro 380s. If you've trained and you know what you're doing with them, they're effective. But rent no less than 10 guns. Yeah, I know it's going to cost a little bit of money, but it'll save you a lot of money in the long run. It'll save you a lot of headache in the long run. And so that's kind of my suggestion on that. Next email. David in St. Paul, Minnesota says he just stumbled across my podcast. He liked the Kimber Revolver Show, which was the last episode. He just asked me to improve the voice quality on my end. And yeah, I was not satisfied with the voice quality, but I couldn't redo the interview. I'm working on that. I think it's a couple settings in my computer that I have to change, or a couple settings on Skype. If that doesn't change it, David, then I will go get a new headset, because that's probably the issue too. I had a real good crystal clear internet connection for that interview with Grant Cunningham, but I apologize, and I am going to work on that. I'm not real technical when it comes to recording and audio and sound and mixing and all that stuff. I'm just not a real technical person in general, but I'll work on that, David. But thanks. Thanks for listening to my show. Go back and listen to some of my older shows. I would invite you to do that. I think you can find about the last 150 episodes on iTunes, if you're using iTunes or whatever podcast catcher you use. And then you can always go to handgunworld.com, and you can either stream them on the website or you can download them off of the website. So check those out. Okay, I want to take this opportunity to let you know that we got a couple of new class reviews regarding our most recent class that we taught in San Antonio, The Art of the First Hit. Check that out. Go to handgunworld.com. I have a whole page of class reviews. There's several of them on there. So if you want to hear from students, actual students that have taken training with me and with Ben Branham, check it out. You know, one of the best ways to vet an instructor is to talk to his or her students that have taken their classes. And we've had several of them put reviews on the class review page. So check that out at handgunworld.com. If this show, if my podcast helps you, if you gain some things by listening to this everyday guy talk about his everyday journey on firearms, please consider supporting my show by buying through my Amazon store. It's been going real well lately. Thank you very much. I extend a huge thank you to all of you. That's also at handgunworld.com. You can find my Amazon store. Use that link on the page whenever you make an Amazon purchase. It doesn't cost you any extra money, but you'll help financially support the Handgun World podcast. I only have one sponsor. That's it. One sponsor. And it took me several years before I loosened up and brought a sponsor on. We did bring some sponsors on for the Self-Defense Radio Network, but Paul and I have kind of put the brakes on that for a while. Several reasons. It just wasn't kind of evolving like we wanted it to. We'll probably revisit that at some point in the future. So basically, I'm back to having only Concealment Solutions as my sponsor. And so if you want to support me, I really greatly appreciate that. Buy your Amazon products through my Amazon link. With that said, just a quick break and I'll get to the next segment.
A woman is approximately 10 times more likely to be successfully raped when she doesn't have a gun, according to a Department of Justice study. This explains why women in the United States use firearms about 200,000 times a year to stop sexual assaults. It also explains why more than 40% of women own or already have access to a firearm. So why do some politicians want to disarm women? Maybe rape isn't a serious enough crime in their minds. Or maybe they don't want to stare down the wrong end of your barrel.
Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, I'm back. Next, I got a message from Matt, and he writes that he has a random question for me. He wants to know what kind of equipment I use when I'm driving and doing my podcast at the same time. He says he's been contemplating and toying with the thought of maybe doing some kind of his own podcast as a beginning shooter, and he said he probably has the most convenient time and the most time to put together his thoughts while he's driving. That's what I found. So he said, I doubt that you're just holding your phone up and speaking into your phone. You're correct, Matt. I am not doing that. The equipment I use is really not all that sophisticated. As I mentioned in the last segment, I'm not very technical. I've got a Sony MP3 recorder that I bought, well, when I first started doing this podcast, and I have been podcasting since August of 2009. So for 8.5 years, I can't do math, can I? 7.5 years since August 2009, I have been using this same Sony MP3 recorder. Now, there is a setting on this Sony recorder that removes a lot of background noise. So obviously, I set it to the highest setting of removing background noise, highest setting possible. The other key, Matt, is the headset. I use a gaming headset, and it's a different headset than what I use for doing Skype interviews. And I think that might be the weak spot in my Skype interviews, as I mentioned in the last segment. But the one that I use, I got from my son. He didn't want to use it anymore. He was using it to do all of his video games and things like that. He didn't want it. He wanted something different. So he bought something different, and he gave me his old gaming headset, and it works fantastic in conjunction with my Sony MP3 recorder. And I also have found that that drains out a lot of the background noise when I'm driving. And, of course, I drive a Rolls Royce. So, you know, that cuts back on the sound. No, I dumped the 2002. Well, I didn't dump the 2002 Honda, the old Handgun World Mobile Studio. I gave it to my son, and then my son totaled it out in February. And so I was driving my 07 Honda for a while, which was a little quieter. And believe it or not, now the 2006 Toyota 4Runner that I bought, that's quieter than any of the other vehicles that I've had. So the combination of those three helped to create, you know, fairly clear podcasts when I'm driving. About as clear as I would expect when I'm driving down the road, because it's hard. It's hard to get crystal clear sound when you're driving, but that's when I can do most of my critical thinking, and it's when I got a lot of time to myself without a lot of interruptions. And most of the time, I turn my iPhone on silent. Sometimes I forget, and then you guys hear the ringing of my phone, and then I have to sometimes stop, depending on who's calling. I got to stop and take the call. Normally, it's a business call to make some money so that I can, keep feeding me and my family and keep doing these podcasts. And then Matt also wants to know, what do I do? He says he knows I'm in sales for my everyday job. Speaking of a phone call, here we go. And I'm not driving. Wouldn't you know it? While I'm talking about getting phone calls while podcasting, I get one. All right, so he wants to know, what do I do? He knows I'm in outside sales. He wants to know, what do I sell specifically? Right now, I sell hotel door locks and hotel security systems. And I've only done this for 5.5 years. I've been in outside sales for over 30 years, Matt. But that's what I do right now. And he says he likes the idea of being able to wear khakis and a pullover and make a solid income. Yeah, that's how I get to dress. Either a pullover. Sometimes I have a button-down dress shirt and I leave it untucked. And then sometimes if I'm kind of going into a more corporate level meeting, I actually tuck my shirt in and I slide a 380 in my pocket. That's rare. I don't do that a lot, but sometimes that's what I have to do to kind of fit in. But Matt, there you go. There's the answer to that question. Thanks for the message. And I think I'm going to take a real brief break. You're not going to have much of a break. But I'm going to, because I got to take care of something real quick, and I'll be right back. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's all, folks. That's it for this episode. Many thanks again to Chuck Boylan for spending some time after dinner in the New Orleans area when I was in town on business, and I really appreciate him sharing his experiences with us. Keep those emails coming and voicemails. Don't forget, you can actually voicemail a 3-minute voicemail to my show, 210-646-1727. 210-646-1727. I'll put you on the podcast as long as you're not using profanity and stuff like that, which I don't think you would, but hey, you never know. And by the way, folks, always feel free to disagree with me or point out things where I might not have been completely correct. I don't mind. I'm a big boy, and I actually have an open mind, and I embrace that. So if you want to do that too, area code 210-646-1727. Our Shooters Club that Ben Branham and I put together, Ben Branham from the Modern Self-Protection Podcast, is a great reinforcement resource for you. And the reason I say reinforcement, it's a video program. It's a membership only. You got to be a member to access the videos that we produce. It's not training. It doesn't replace training, but it really, really reinforces a lot of what you probably learn out there in classes. And it's great. You can, if you're going to dry fire practice, you can join our Shooters Club, watch some of our videos, and then dry fire practice. Or take your iPhone or iPad out to the range with you, watch the video, and then practice what we have, what we did on the video and showed you how to do. All right, so you might want to consider joining that. $8 a month, that's it. You can support this show for only $8 per month. If you want to get a discount, $75 for an entire one-year membership to the Shooters Club, go to the Shooters Club page at handgunworld.com, the Shooters Club page at handgunworld.com. You'll see how to get signed up. And thank you for buying your Amazon products, your everything you buy on Amazon through my Amazon store. That link is also at handgunworld.com. You guys, a lot of you do it. It really is a great way to help me support this show and keep me going not only financially to pay all the bills and things, but to keep me motivated. Speaking of that, last but not least, would you please put up an iTunes review or whatever method you use for listening to my podcast. They probably have a review section. And if you wouldn't mind putting up a review on what you think of the Handgun World podcast, it helps other people who might be looking at the show. And it also helps out me because I like criticism, constructive or positive or whatever. With that said, folks, I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun. Because I can't carry a cop. And remember, evil does not exist in the holster. It exists in the hearts of men and women. Shoot straight, shoot safe, and I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Okay, so, you know, the issue with the advantage of the red dot at low light levels comes in when if it's almost twilight and you're having a really hard time seeing your sights, especially with the RMRs that are adjustable, they'll dial down to a low output and still let you keep your sights on the target without having a strain. It's just a faster acquisition. And I think in low light levels, they shine even more.
That's what I got, was the adjustable type.
Yeah.
Yeah, you and I were talking a little earlier. I think it's the fact that some people just don't want to put the time in to learn how to shoot it.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just like anything else. I mean, even if you just, you know, just shoot with iron sights, you know, you're not going to get good if you don't put the time in and an effort in. So, you know, the red dot is just a, you know, I think it's a great tool for somebody that's got issues with eyes. If you've had eye surgery, cataract surgery, corrective surgery, you know, I think those would be probably a little bit make or would put the RMR, the red dot, a little bit higher on your list.